You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Well, folks, this gentleman has quite an intro that I do want to spend time on because you need to understand who this man really is. Frank Schaeffer has a problem with fundamentalist Christians, but he also has a problem with the new atheists. And despite the obvious differences in their ideology, it's the same problem. Mindsets that leave no room for questions and even less for tolerance. Frank would even argue that atheism has become a religion in and of itself. In his latest book, Patience with God, Frank offers a middle ground for those who find right-wing evangelicals, it's just always a difficult word to say, really, evangelicals, as distasteful as the uber-liberal lefties who mock them. As Frank explains in his book, there are a whole bunch of people out there, Republican and Democrat, who are disgusted with the polarizing forces that exist in our nations and who believe, or at least try to believe, in God. Frank Schaeffer is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Keeping Faith, and most recently, the memoir, Crazy for God. He's a fiction and nonfiction writer who has written for USA Today, the Washington Post, the San Francisco Chronicle, and the LA Times, and he's a regular contributor to the Huffington Post website and blog. He has appeared on Oprah, Fox News, CNN, and ABC's 2020. The website is frankschaeffer.com. And he's back for his second round here on The Drew Marshall Show. How are you, Frank?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me back.
What did I catch you in the middle of? What are you doing?
I'm sitting staring out the window watching the sun starting to cast long shadows across my lawn after a nice rambling walk. How about you?
Wow. You are prolific, aren't you?
Well, you know, I got to take a little time off sometime. I started this book tour for Patience with God and got back from New York yesterday and been going at it pretty hard, so I figured today I will actually kick back a little bit.
I got to start off with this quote here, right from the prologue. So let others admire and extol him who claims to be able to comprehend Christianity. I regard it then as a plain duty to admit that one neither can nor shall comprehend it. Soren Kierkegaard. That
right.
is a heck of a way to start a book, man.
Well, you know, I like Kierkegaard, and I had been reading him over the years off and on, and I thought that quote was appropriate for a book where I wanted to let people know right up front that this was not a sermon, and I was not trying to ram my version of how I look at spirituality down their throat, but I wanted to start at the beginning by saying, look, A, I could be wrong, probably am about a lot I'm saying, if not all of it, and B, we're talking here about spirituality, which means that this isn't a book with footnotes. It's not a book that sets out to prove anything. It's a book that talks about the way I see things, some life experiences, and draws a critique of folks who draw a harder line. But I'm not pretending that I have the answers and the way. Rather, this is just a book of one human being talking to other human beings about maybe a few things he's learned along the path that they'll find interesting and perhaps even helpful.
I'm sick of religion for the same reason I'm tired of my body, how it's getting old, how every morning when I wake up the dreary realization crashes in. I'm still me. Sick of being me or not, I still brush my teeth, take a daily vitamin, stick to my low-dose aspirin regime, drink red wine because I like it, and it's better for me than white wine, and get colonoscopies from time to time. Apparently they're a real pain. I still go to church too, regardless of the fact that I get dumb hate mails signed in Christ.
That's right.
Blasting me for everything from my support of President Obama to having fled my evangelical fundamentalist roots and the Republican Party. Do people just say that you're just a chain rattler? You're just an autodidactic iconoclast?
Well, I wish they put it in terms that were that literate. I mean, usually they're a little more basic and misspelled and involve a lot of F something blank U.
In Christ. Yeah.
And so forth. But, yeah, I think, you know, looking at the sort of body of work that's developed around my writing, you know, I've written fiction, novels like Portofino, Zervette, Saving Grandma, and most recently Baby Jack. That has one readership. And they see the fact that I people those books with folks that have some religious interest because, of course, you know, even novel, a piece of fiction is somewhat based on your own life. And so, you know, you write about what you know about. But, you know, they aren't thinking that these are statements about a particular childhood because they don't know about my childhood. And then there are people who read my memoir like Crazy for God or now Patience with God. And in those books, they find out that, of course, I'm obsessing somewhat over things that I know about because I was raised in them. And I think in Patience with God, the difference is that I try to, in this book, admit that, you know, where my conditioning, my childhood, what I was raised with, my genetics from my parents, whatever it may be, ends, and where my own beliefs that I thought out and have a reason for begin, I don't know, and I don't care anymore because I accept the fact that religion is important to me. How I got that way is not the point. The point is, you know, what we learn along the road, and that I guess I've changed from my evangelical past where I believed that salvation was a matter of correct ideas to rather seeing this as a journey where it isn't about correct ideas or correct beliefs. It's all about the content of your character. How you get there, whether it's as a Christian or a Buddhist or an atheist or an agnostic, is not the point. It's who you are. And so that, for me, is the big shift. And really, the theme of Patience with God is critiquing people of the left and the right, fundamentalist Christians and fundamentalist atheists, who essentially have gotten to the point where they just shake their fists in each other's faces. And it's all about putting down the point of view you disagree with rather than admitting right off the top, look, none of us really know. Life is too short to know. We can hope, we can believe, we can trust. This is what faith is. But let's stop pretending that we're the Wizard of Oz, pull the curtain back, admit a lot of it is just smoke and mirrors and levers, and a lot of it is because your mother either put you to bed at night and prayed with you and read you a Bible story, or she didn't. So, you know, we all are who we are, and we got this way often not because of good reasons, but because of certain accidents of history. And let's start there and be honest about it. And that's kind of the approach of the book.
But Frank, don't you have the confident assurance that what we hope for is going to happen? You know, that Hebrews 11 verse, I mean, I'm sure people have pushed back on
sure.
you and your thing and go, seriously, where is your confident assurance that what you believe is actually true?
Well, first I would just say my readership for Patience with God, as with my novels, you know, I left the evangelical world, you know, what, 1984, my math's really fuzzy, but you tell me how many years ago that was, 85, 90, by 1990, so I was really out of that milieu. You know, the people who've been reading my novels don't come from that background, and so they're not thinking of it in those terms. Now, with Patience with God, and hopefully not making a mistake doing so, I've kind of doubled back and really tried to write a book that addresses exactly that concern. And my point here is that even fundamentalists who are declared as such, even my parents, let's say back in the 1950s when my dad, Francis Schaeffer, was raising me in Labrie Fellowship in Switzerland, which became a well-known evangelical ministry, you know, even they were picking and choosing in terms of the Bible verses they would apply and what they would believe and what they would act on. You know, we weren't stoning homosexuals to death at Labrie, and you know, people who came to their marriage bed and had lost their virginity were not dragged out to the city gates and killed, as the New Testament, rather the Old Testament, commanded them to be. And Dad wasn't waiting for the apocalypse every day, and he wasn't rooting for war in the Middle East so Jesus would come back sooner.
Yeah, but did you ever rent the Left Behind movie? Because that's crucial.
Yeah, that's crucial, right. So the point being that even in fundamentalist circles, if fundamentalists are honest about it, they're picking and choosing, and it's called thinking. And, of course, we're supposed to think and pick and choose. And I, in Patience with God, I just come out and say it, and I say it honestly, and that's what everybody's doing anyway. So let's look for that thread in church history, which comes right from the beginning, which has always viewed talking about God and talking about eternal things, first of all, from a point of view of humility, and secondly, in a more formal sense, what came to be known as apophatic theology, which goes back to the beginning, this idea that all we can really know about God is what we don't know, and we can't make these big statements the way, say, certain branches of fundamentalist Christianity do. I think one of the things I've learned doing some reading on this, both church history and some of the church fathers, one of the things that really surprised me after I left Protestantism, I always thought, you know, the more, quote, original Christianity, the older it was, kind of like grandparents and so forth, was going to be very, very strict, and it would be sort of modernity and liberals and post-18th century Enlightenment thinking infecting seminaries that sort of made it more wishy-washy or mystical or liberal or less literalistic. And actually, the threat of a less literalistic approach, less chapter and verse, less theologically inclined, more about content of your character, more about the mystery of God, less about whether you believe this particular story in the Bible is true or not. It goes right back to the beginning. So you read some of the earliest church fathers, like Evagrius the Solitary that I talk about in the book a little bit. He sounds like he's teaching at a modern, quote, liberal theological seminary. He'd be fired from any evangelical school in America in a heartbeat because he's saying things like, you can't know who God is. It's beyond description. We don't know whether these stories are literal or not, so forth and so on. Now, whether you agree with that is not the point. The point I'm making here is that there are really two threads running through even traditional Christianity, and one of them is mystical, open, tolerant, quite humane, certainly doesn't look at other people and judge them as lost or saved, believes that the Bible is hard to interpret, that it's a book that has, if not mistakes in it, then certainly parts that have been misinterpreted because they're completely mystical and are taken as literal when they're not. And whether I say this or not, the point is that this thread goes right back in the history of not just Christianity, but Judaism. And so there's two threads that have coexisted, and we hear about fundamentalism in a way as if that's the original Christianity, and it's not. That's just simply a fact.
So you would like people to return to the church of the hopeful uncertainty?
I would like people to, first of all, say, look, we all talk about the big questions, capital B, you know, big questions, and we draw these big conclusions, and we make these statements, and we quote verses, and we make arguments. Or if we're Hitchens and Dawkins, we write nasty books and call Christians and other religious people idiots. But back off for a minute, because what do we really know about spirituality? Well, let me tell you something I know. I know that I love my little granddaughter, Lucy. I spend a lot of time talking about Lucy in the book. I have a picture of her on the back flap standing with me, or she's not standing, she's 5 months old and in my arms. I know that when my mother, who's just turned 95, is losing her memory, that she still remembers my name and is joyful when she greets me on the telephone, even though she won't remember the call later, that these things are where I see not just the hand of God, but a greater meaning in my life than can just be explained by chemicals and brainwaves and evolutionary psychology. And that really where you and me and probably everybody listening to this program live is not in the realm of the big eternal questions. We live in a world where what really measures what's happening to us is whether, for instance, take my example, I got my wife pregnant when we were teenagers, we weren't married, whether over those years this young teenage jerk that fell in love with her has changed any, whether a sacramental path makes me a little wiser or better or a kinder father than I was to my little kid I was raising as a teenager, whether I'm a different human being now with my little granddaughter Lucy, and whether I've learned anything because of these beliefs I say I have, and whether they've made me into a kind of a person that maybe actually looks at least some of the day like he's following an example of Jesus Christ, not talking about who the person of Christ is in some theological abstract sense, but whether the life actually is changed. And I think we have to ask these atheists who are making these bold claims about atheism the same thing. I think it's perfectly legitimate, as I do in my book, Patience with God, here, you know, in my chapters that look at Hitchens and Dawkins, I shine the same light on them that they're shining on people like priests who are, you know, buggering little boys in church, or guys like Haggard who are committing scandals, or the Crusades, or all these things. If, you know, if atheism is going to say it produces more moral people or better people, then we have a right to scrutinize the leaders of the movement just like they scrutinize the leaders of Christianity.
Sure.
And you look at a lot of these guys, and they're not terribly nice people, and they've screwed their lives up pretty royally. And so whatever ideas are informing the choices that someone like Hitchens is making, who turns out to be a really nasty piece of work if you look at the body of his writing and how he comes through and examples that you just see that are actually rather shocking, you know, this is the pot calling the kettle black. There's nobody here who should be lording it over somebody else, and that includes Christians who say, you know, if you know Jesus, you'll be better. Well, let's look at what kind of person you really are, whether you're consistent.
But shouldn't there be a change, though? Should there not be a life change? You know, I hear that all the time because I admit openly on my show what kind of a spiritual schmuck I am, and my spiritual disciplines are hopeless. I read somewhere in your book you said I'm no longer proselytizing. I dig that. We had a guy who wrote in today, and he said this. He was a college student. He wanted to know if other people doubt as many things about God as he does. And here's his list. You ready, Frank?
Sure.
He says, I doubt if prayer actually changes God's mind. I doubt God physically heals. I doubt that Jesus is the only way to God. I doubt that people have any of the miraculous spiritual gifts like prophecy, healing, and tongues. I doubt that there is a literal place called hell where people who are judged by God go to spend an eternity in torment. I doubt that God speaks audibly to people. Right. I doubt that there's a supernatural Satan who's the boss of many supernatural demons. And, of course, the biggie, I doubt whether or not God really exists. And we had a guy write in and say, Well, I think he said he thought Tony Campolo said this when he encountered students with the same kind of predicament. They would come into his office with the same kind of story, and Tony Campolo, or whether it was true or not, somebody would say, well, how long have you been having sex with your boyfriend or girlfriend?
Right, right. But the thing is, when you look at his list of what he's saying there, that just proves he's sane. Because there's a form of insanity that would say, I'm sure about these things. Well, then you're crazy, because I'm not sure about anything, because I've been here 2 minutes, and I blink in geological time, not even a millisecond. And the total span of my life is really like an ant's eye view of a passing highway. And to stand there as an ant and make statements on the federal highway system in North America, going into Canada and so forth, all he sees is the pebble in front of him and a blur as cars go by. We're in that position making these big statements about theology, and so this guy's doubts are exactly right, and I would say any sane person would at certain times be agnostic. There's other mornings you'll get up and you'll be an atheist. There's other mornings you get up and you'll have a very complete faith in Christ, and anybody who says different is either lying or has flipped out. I mean, they can't think anymore. Listen, I've been married for close to 40 years, and I have what most people would look at and say is a good marriage. Three kids, three grandchildren, we're still together, we love each other. I don't know who those crazy kids were back when we, in the late 60s, when we hooked up. But now, you know, I'm pretty grown up, more or less, and my wife and I love each other, we know who we are. How does this quote-unquote good marriage that a lot of my friends sort of envy in there saying, oh, how did you guys do this? Well, it's a day at a time. It's getting up some mornings and wishing I could sleep with some young woman I saw and thinking about it. It's other days when we have big fights and the choices do we make up or just walk out on each other. There's days when we're very in love and Jeannie looks like she's 18 and wonderful. There's other days when I think she looks like an old woman and I look at myself in the mirror and I'm you know, gravity's taking its toll and I'm thinking, wow, you know, this is crap. So I don't think there are simple solutions in marriage, spirituality. It's the same thing. You make choices. You say, listen, on the day I doubt, I've chosen to act as if I'm not doubting. I've chosen that I will love my wife and I'll be faithful, even though I'd much rather not. That's how you do it. There's no magic formula saying, well, if I just, you know, could get this one little born-again experience, take this pill, everything would be fine with God. Or if I just say I accept Jesus, now I've got all the answers. Or if I just say, you know, repeat 50 times at moonrise, I love my wife, now I'll never lust after somebody else.
Yeah, good
I'd
luck
rather
with
be
that.
Chasing it. Yeah. It isn't like that.
Right.
So you have these lists of doubts. This isn't typical of spirituality. It's typical of everything. There are days that I'd rather not be a writer, but I plug away.
All right. I read a quote early in our show when we were talking about that fellow and the doubt and all this, because his premise was this. Look, I doubt all this stuff. Is there anybody else that doubts as many things as I do? Because if I doubted this much about any group I belong to, if I was part of the Conservative Party and right. I doubted all of these things about the Conservative Party, I would leave the Conservative Party. So I
think he is looking. Look, I use this example in my book, and I think it's a really good one to describe why the new atheists like Hitchens and Dawkins sell a lot of books and why people, you know, by the purpose-driven life and hope that's a roadmap for them. It's the same instinct we all have, and I mean we all. I'm not making fun of anybody else. When you see that commercial for the amazing knife set from 1995 that never needs sharpening, the guy pretends he cuts across a hammer and then he cuts a tomato and it's beautiful and the knife's still not dull. Everything you know about physics, life, the world, the way things work, you know these knives someday will need sharpening if you use them every day. But that little piece of your brain says, wow, I wish I could get something that just works perfectly as advertised and I never have to sharpen it. And here's one thing in my life, you know, that will never need a pit stop, never need an oil change. It'll just work forever. Lifetime guarantee. And if it wasn't for that inclination, these guys would go bust. I bought a 1995 knife set once that never needs sharpening. They're all dull now.
Right.
And there's no lifetime guarantee. These guys know I'm not going to wrap them up and package them up and send them to this P.O. box in Georgia.
I think we should all do that. We should all take our Ginsu knives and mail them tomorrow.
That's right. But the thing is, look, I'm a grown-up, and I wasn't terribly good at science, but I know enough about physics to know knives. I still bought the thing. So the guy who says I would leave the Conservative Party or whatever it is, or the Republican Party, or Christianity, or my wife, or whatever, if I had this list of doubts about other things, I would say it's the other way around. Expect a list of if you're thinking and you're a grown-up and you've matured a little bit and you've learned something from this life, it's that everything is a list of doubts. And your choice is not whether to doubt or to believe. It's whether to press forward with what you've chosen to be. So, for instance, to me, to be a Christian is not to believe that Jesus was the Son of God or not believe, because some days you believe more, some days you believe less.
Okay.
It's not a question to be sincere. It's whether you choose to get up in the morning and imitate Christ to the best of your ability, not as a theological idea, but as a practical matter. And that, to me, is the way life works, whether it's marriage or spirituality.
Okay. I was visiting a friend of mine whom I respect very much, and as I was leaving, he said to me, the road doesn't have to be bumpy. He and I have had many talks about, because I'm wired a little bit like you.
Right.
I am a pain in so many people's spiritual backsides because I have the spiritual gift of pessimism, okay?
Yeah, that's good.
But he says, look, the road doesn't have to be bumpy. It's narrow, but it doesn't have to be bumpy. And it really stuck with me. I really started thinking about that, and I thought, you know, let me read this quote to you as well, because I will finish on this. I was given this book last night by Peter Kreft? I don't know.
Yeah, Peter Kreft.
Right. Here's an interesting thing. Our modern world is, in fact, a clear countersign to the three virtues of faith, hope, and love. Doubt, despair, and selfishness are the pillars of modern life, not faith, hope, and charity. Our world sees faith as naivete, hope as Pollyanna-style wishful thinking, and charity as weakness.
Yeah, but see, I don't agree with them at all. I don't see the world at all as opposite of what Christians are. I think we're all human beings, and I think Richard Dawkins and Billy Graham, if you peel back just one layer, are the same people. Belief in what people think and conclusions we draw is only one tiny part of our life. It's what we babble about. The fact is, when you peel the layer back, people behave well, they behave badly. That's what we see. That's the real difference. When it comes to ideas, for instance, people ask me about my dad. What did Francis Schaeffer believe about fill in the blank? And I will say, it depends which Francis Schaeffer you're talking about. Do you mean the young, fiery fundamentalist preacher who came to Europe in 1947? Do you mean the guy in the 1960s that was running what is more or less a hippie commune before there were such places, where, you know, people like Timothy Leary were coming for discussions and Dad was talking about art and music and not giving Bible studies anymore because he had more or less lost interest in that? Or are you talking about the guy who in the last 6 years of his life was along with me out on the road as part of the religious right that I left after he died, and then he got branded with being quote-unquote a father of the religious right along with Jerry Falwell? Who are you talking about? Because you'd get three different answers. And what I say in patience with God is, look, these ideas that, you know, it's all settled and secure and you've got this faith, whether it's an atheist saying there is no God or a Christian saying Jesus saves, it's never that simple. And that's why I don't believe that the quote-unquote born-again experience is anything more than a fabrication of North American evangelicalism in the last 200 years, looking for that kind of simple, quick-fix, silver bullet, consumerist approach to faith. The real issue here is taking a journey. And in a lot of times, the question is the answer. And what I mean by that is the very fact that we ask questions and want some spiritual meaning in our life is one good indication that there is something out there to look for.
Okay. Dan Taylor, you know his book, The Myth of Certainty?
Yes, I have heard of it. I haven't read it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. No, it's all right. I'll tell him that you haven't read it yet.
Yeah, probably hasn't read mine,
But, the premise of The Myth of Certainty, and I've brought this up a number of times on our show, is that doubt is more compatible with faith than certainty.
Right.
You would agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is doubt a virtue?
Yeah, I think it is, because it means that you're not an arrogant SOB who thinks you know everything.
Right.
That was not a facetious answer.
No,
I mean that seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I look back on the certainties of my youth and I say, you know, what an idiot that guy was, A, and B, what a pain it would have been to have a discussion with him, because he never would have backed off anything, changed his mind, or said, I don't know. And I got to say, it's not a tactic with me, but when I speak, I mean, an interview is different because you're answering questions, but when I talk, I spend quite a bit of time explaining to people up front that what I'm proposing is what I think right now. I may change my mind, and I'm sure I'm wrong about a lot of the stuff I'm saying. And that's not a tactical kind of position yourself. I mean, literally, I know looking back now at things I've changed my mind on that there's probably stuff I'm saying right today to you right now that's in my new book, Patience with God, that 15 years down the road, I'm going to sit there and just shake my head and say, what kind of a naive idiot wrote that? Because I will have learned more.
Folks, we're just about to say goodbye with Frank Schaeffer. Of course, he is the author of this latest book, Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. When we say goodbye to you, Frank, I'm going to interview somebody, a man who was once immersed in virtually every aspect of the Christian community.
Right.
but has since gone through two failed marriages, financial ruin, and even a short stint in prison. And now he kind of feels that it's pointless, really, to keep calling himself a Christian, since he's obviously failed at that as well.
Right.
What do you say to him?
Well, I don't know who this guy is. Where does he live? In America? North America?
He lives up here.
In Canada.
Yeah.
I would just say that's not how you measure success or failure of your faith, because there's always circumstances involved, and I would look at it slightly differently. I would just say he's at a place on a journey, in a path, where he has obviously run off the path a couple of times, had some problems, but that it's only a question of magnitude, because every problem he has, that is, you know, a divorce or this time in prison or whatever, is where everybody has been. It's just that either we didn't get caught, or we didn't fall off the path quite as far, or, you know, our weaknesses, our problems, our falling off the path is in areas that aren't so easily measured, like a divorce, because you either are or aren't. So I would just say, you know, everybody's in the same boat, and being a Christian or not being a Christian has nothing to do with I think either correct belief or not making mistakes. I think what it has to do with is that, you know, is the person of Christ someone you try to follow? And try is the word. And different people achieve different levels of success in trying. But the trying was the point, not the level of success, since no one gets there anyway.
But when does one stop identifying themselves as Christian?
I think there are plenty of agnostics and atheists who have not identified themselves as anything. But if you measure Christianity by its own standard, which is the content of one's character and the desire of one's heart, the label doesn't matter. So I think the real issue is, when do you stop trying to be the kind of person you would admire?
I'm processing that. It sounds a little Oprah-ish.
Well, it's not my fault. I mean, you know, Oprah does say things once in a while that are true. I mean, just, you know, every clock is right twice a day, you know, even a stop clock. You know.
No, I'm just thinking about that because, you know, I think that's what a lot. Look, I've said to people many times over the years, you know, we believe the lie. And I really believe that there is a series of lies that screw up our thinking about who we are,
right,
and about who God is. And I think the lie that comes along is, you know what, seriously, you suck at this Jesus stuff so bad.
Right.
You need to just put it on the shelf. Stop calling yourself a Jesus Christian, whatever the deal is. Go do whatever you need to get done in life there, and then maybe you might come around back to it later when your life gets settled down. And it's kind of like the Israelites at the bottom of the mountain when they were doing every nasty deed, and all of a sudden Moses shows up, and the guy goes, oh, we are scared to death of God because we've been bad. Can
right.
you talk to God? And Moses goes, no.
Yeah.
Let your sin cause you to go to him, not from him.
Yeah, but I think that the point here, and I think this is also what you're saying, is that when it comes to any of these issues, I think that we have to see them in bite-sized pieces. The point is not, you know, to define all these big questions all the time. It's to take a look at the areas of our life where we have seen some growth and progress, and it really is not a question of, did we get here with correct ideas? No one did, because no one has enough exhaustive knowledge about anything to have, quote, completely correct ideas. And so the real issue, it always comes back to this concept of a journey. And I think this is where evangelicalism, beginning with its concept of a born-again experience, correct theology, all the rest of it, has completely fallen off the rails, not of historic Christianity, but just simple common sense, the way the world works. And I think it's produced a kind of a judgmental pietism, which you see in, you know, the Sarah Palin Republican Party, speaking of what's south of the border from you guys, well, north in her case, because she's in Alaska.
Yeah,
or
right.
Put it this way, the ozone layer, because it's really another planet now.
Yeah.
You know, but right-wing American, North American, I would say, or at least the United States Christianity, is so far and away crazy. I mean, I'll just leave you with this thought in terms of the insanity. Speaking for the United States, evangelical Christians, Republican Christians, right-wing Christians, here's their formula. To be a Christian means we believe in legalized torture, but we don't believe in health care for everyone. Now, if that's a reflection of good ideas and a born-again experience, then, you know, let's work for the agnostics and try to make sure no one is ever president again of this country who believes in God, because these are dangerous, crazy people. So, you know, anybody who doesn't want to identify with Christianity anymore has my complete sympathy, and maybe the label has been so ruined by being, you know, affixed to the people like Sarah Palin and these others who are clearly out of their minds, either that or just driven by hate.
How do you really feel?
That, you know, maybe we have to come up with new terms. So let's just call ourselves agnostics for Jesus or something.
I like it. I really like you. I like your writing. You are a brilliant writer. Aside from the fact that, you know, I get where your head is at, which is scary when you think of it. You're a great writer. You really are, Frank.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
It was good to have you back on the show again. Folks, again, Frank Schaefer, author of Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. You can go get it now, everywhere and anywhere. FrankSchaefer.com is the website. Frank, thank you, mate.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Thanks.
Always refreshing to talk to that young fella. When we come back, you heard us talk about it a little bit before. It's our Journey segment, and today we have a guest in studio who was once immersed in virtually every aspect of the Christian community, but has since gone through two failed marriages, financial ruin, and even a short stint in prison. And now he feels that it's pointless to keep calling himself a Christian since he's obviously failed at that as well, loser. Well, when does one stop identifying themselves as Christian? That's going to be our discussion when we come back from our short break, and then... So you think God wants you to sing? Yes, folks, we're going to talk about our contest. It is, our finalists are there. Our top 12 finalists are on our website. Go check them out. Click on the one, you know, vote for the one that you want to win. And then Carrie Pomeroli will join us at the end of the show. I hope she has some abuse for Tim. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.